It is Tuesday, August the 22nd. Joining us on the phone, Jen Stowe, the Executive Director at the National Domestic Workers Alliance. Thank you so much for being with us, Jen. I am so grateful for you joining, because I am very passionate about this conversation, and I always want to have it.
Selena, thank you so much for having me on this morning. Like, everyone has a care story or is connected to care, and so I'm so happy to be with you.
This is so true, right? Because one of the things I think that everybody at home needs to understand is that you have benefited from a care worker, whether you know it or not. So talk a bit about what jobs we're talking about. What workers are we talking about? Just to give people a full picture of the types of people who are impacted by something like a federal domestic worker bill of rights.
Yes, when we say domestic workers, we're talking about anyone who works in a private home providing, you know, caregiving or cleaning services. So this is work that is overwhelmingly done by women. Over 90% of domestic workers are women. The majority of those women are women of color, and many are immigrant. And the domestic workforce actually has the highest concentration of undocumented workers than any other workforce in our society. And so this has really impacted how the workforce is viewed and how the work is viewed and valued as well. Just who does the work is really important in thinking about the workforce and the protections that they need.
When you say caregiving, what are some of the things we're talking about? Because I think when we think about caregivers, maybe if you've had an experience like I have where you've needed an actual in-home caregiver for an elderly parent or an ill parent, you know what that word means. But I think it's actually a word that doesn't have a lot of meaning for people who haven't had direct connections with this profession. So talk a bit about caregivers specifically and what kinds of things that they do.
Yes, of course. When we say caregiving, we mean the people who are caring for their loved ones, simply put. So that can mean caring for a child, caring for the elderly, caring for our disabled loved ones. And we really want the notion of being a caregiver to be built really politicized. I love that you said that some people don't know what that means unless they've actually done it themselves, and it's so true. But the fact of the matter that all of us will either have been cared for or we're cared for someone through the course of our lives, and so having that connection is really important. But when we name domestic workers who are caregiving, we mean paid caregivers.
Right.
But we need to, you know, really note that all caregiving is really important, and we know that it's largely done by women. And a lot of times women's work is not valued the way that it should be. And so by caregiving, we really mean taking care of folks in homes.
I want to talk specifically about the reintroduction of the Federal Domestic Worker Bill of Rights. But before we talk about the policy in our country, I want to talk about other countries for a second. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that frustrates me every time I go to Europe or anytime I read about Europe is the fact that they've figured out how to do caregiving in a different way. Is it perfect? No. Is everything perfect? No. Mm-hmm. But they figured out how to support pregnant people, people with elderly loved ones, people who need care in a different way structurally and through policy than we have. Can you talk a bit about some of the other examples of how societies and governments have supported the profession of caregiving? And then we can talk about what we need specifically here and what's in this new reintroduction of the Federal Domestic Worker Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. You noted that some countries in Europe and other countries just structurally have systems that provide more support for caregivers. Really, we call it, you know, from the cradle to the grave protection for their citizens and for folks in their society. They know that care is, without care, nothing is possible, and domestic work is the work that makes all other work possible. So some countries have things, everything from providing paid time off, paid family leave, providing childcare, universal childcare, providing home and community-based services, and really providing a lot of support so that people can actually age in their homes. We know that, you know, Americans and American society, we have a very individualistic approach to things. And oftentimes we think that care is an individual responsibility. So I think what other countries have done well and what we're trying to do is really shift that notion of care being an individualistic, you know, thing that you have to grapple with as a person. And really, we want folks to know that everyone deserves care and that the government has a role to play to provide care as well.
One of the things you just said is so profound, in this idea that we're so individualistic that we're like, oh, you know, you broke your back. Good luck to you. You know, figure it out. You know,
that's,
and I
right.
feel like there's something very callous about that. I understand that we want to have liberty and freedom, but that doesn't actually scream freedom to me, Jen.
No, it doesn't scream freedom at all. And we don't have to do it alone. I think also people, you know, the pandemic showed that the system is broken and that we really should do something to fundamentally shift it. And I also think that even when you're doing everything right, you know, it's hard to think about the support you need to really care for your families. People have every right to be upset and frustrated because, you know, everything that they're doing, you know, isn't enough. And so I think when you're not able to care for your loved ones, there's a sense of like a loss of control and unraveling. And so we really want to tap into people's personal experiences and stories to really affirm that it's not your personal failure. You don't have to do it alone. You know, our culture has taught us that we personally fail, but we know that is just not true.
Right. It's such an important point that it is not your personal failure. If you can't somehow work your full-time job,
right,
and also care for your child and also care for your partner or your spouse and also care for your elderly parent all at the same time.
Like, it's
actually
impossible.
That's impossible. There
it's
are not
impossible.
Enough hours in the day.
No, Zerlina. And so many people are trying to do multiple things. So there's so many people who are in what we call the sandwich generation.
Yeah.
I don't know a Black woman my age or close to my age who isn't dealing with how to take care of their parents, how to take care of their kids, how to provide support. So we're feeling it on both ends, both making sure that we can care for our elderly folks and taking care of our kids too.
So let's talk about the Federal Domestic Worker Bill of Rights, because that was just reintroduced by three Democratic representatives, both the two Democratic senators and also a Democratic representative in the House. So talk about what's in it.
Yeah, so the Federal Domestic Worker Bill of Rights is the first national legislation that creates strong rights and workplace protections for domestic workers in across the country. So domestic workers who work in private homes. So it's important to know the history of why the bill is needed. You know, the domestic workforce has a history of exclusion and racism because domestic workers were left out of, there were sweeping protections, labor protections in the New Deal in the 1930s. Domestic workers were not included in those protections and farm workers weren't. And so racial exclusion is really defined how not only the workforce was treated from the start, but also how the work has been valued. And so we're really looking to create a standard that provides, you know, respect, dignity, and recognition for all domestic workers by really making sure that they have rights and workplace protection that they should have had, you know, in the first place and back in the 1930s when the New Deal was passed.
One of the things I think a lot about is the idea that this work specifically, some of it is not valued because it's sort of seen as like, quote unquote, what a woman should be doing, like in her traditional gender role, if we're talking about the binary that we've set up here, which I think is stupid. But talk a bit about the fact that we've devalued anything considered woman's work, like, you know, cleaning up the house and the laundry and making sure everybody is fed and bathed and cared for, that's just supposed to be what you're doing. You don't get paid for that. You don't get compensated for that. And how dare you even ask for some healthcare benefits? Like, you know, who are you to ask for benefits for something that isn't that your biblical role as a woman in the traditional family? And I think that this is a moment in 2023 where we have to shed that. We have to let that go. That never worked then for any of those women in our ancestry, and it's not working now.
100%, Zerlina, and we know that women's work is essential and goes unnoticed all the time. And, you know, I talked about the exclusion of domestic workers in the New Deal. You know, we know why domestic workers were excluded. We know that Black women who were enslaved did the care work for free. And that is why the work was not valued like it should have been. And that has really impacted how the work is viewed today, not just the work done by Black women, but all women, the work of care being devalued and something that women should do and, you know, is often seen as help and low skilled, when domestic workers and people who care for folks are responsible for, you know, oftentimes the making sure that people have a comfortable, you know, into their lives. They're responsible for human potential. Like, it's a very skilled job. We know that. And we know that it just is not valued the way that it should be.
It's definitely a skilled job. As somebody who personally benefited from home care, mm-hmm. and also, you know, obviously learning from home care aides and nursing staff how to care for my mother as she was dealing with a long illness before she passed away, mm-hmm. that is a skill set. You have to learn how to give medication. A lot of home care folks are giving medications on a daily basis,
yes.
and keeping your family member healthy, alive, clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, obviously it's uncomfortable for some people to sort of talk about this stuff, but we have to talk about this stuff. This is something that is a universal experience. Every single person listening to the sound of my voice right now is either themselves or going to know somebody that is going to need care at some point in their life, right? And I think that we want to have dignity in those mm-hmm. moments. And that comes through compassionate and quality care. But those people that are giving that care need to be supported through benefits and policies.
That's right. People who provide care, they want family-sustaining wages, you know. They want to be able to take care of their families with the wages that they earn. Home care workers, a lot of those home care jobs are poverty jobs, you know, that earn like an average of $18,000 per year. So even people who see this as a calling and love this work, you know, can't sustain the work. They right. can't take care of their own families. And this is just noting that we need to stabilize the workforce. We need to make sure that these jobs are good jobs that really pay a family sustaining wage.
One of the things I also read about in preparing for the conversation this morning is, at the end of September,
mm-hmm.
many of the benefits that were put into place because of the pandemic and the assistance federally is going to go away. So what will the impact be of the coming sort of childcare cliff, as I've heard it described?
The impact will be huge. I think we see that we're fighting in coalition with other organizations, really fighting really to urge organizations to really push to avert the child care cliff. I mean, it threatens the well-being of kids, families, like early educators, teachers, businesses, and communities. We know that that I think it's over 3 million kids could lose child care as a result. Mm-hmm. And so we're really asking for an investment. It really, you know, like I said, the system is not structurally sound. The system that really supports care, the paid leave, child care, and home and community-based services system. And so we want and need an investment for $16 billion a year, because we know that there are shrinking childcare spots, there's staffing shortages, there's rising prices, and this will all disrupt how people are able to you know, go to work. It's going to disrupt families, and but also our economy. You know, you need care to be able to participate in the economy and society. And so we see this as an emergency. And we are calling on electeds to really put an investment into these programs.
One of the things that you said that's really important is how it will impact the economy. I mean, just to sort of make it plain for people, you can't go to work if you don't have childcare.
No,
you can't do anything if you don't have childcare. And every parent out there, every person who is responsible for being a guardian or a parent to a child, they know that. You know, like you're in the house with the kid if your child care falls through. You know, if the babysitter calls out, if the babysitter can't come, you can't do the thing. And
that's right.
The thing is, going to your place of employment to make income to provide food and shelter and resources for the child, then that's a pickle.
That's right.
Also, we're talking about taking that one example and then multiplying by how many millions of families, and then thinking about that then exponential impact on the entire economy. Like, I feel like this is an undercover thing because, again, this is mostly women
who
are directly impacted by this cliff.
That's right. And we know that a lot of the child care workers are women of color, Zerlina. And just like with home care workers, child care workers, there's a pay disparity between child care workers and other workers, hourly workers, folks who work in retail and restaurants. And so people don't want to be child care workers. You know, the pay is not great. The hours are long. And so we really see, you know, as businesses start to bring back workers actually in offices, and we see that pay disparity growing even larger. And so we need investments to make sure that people who want to be child care providers, early education, teachers, that they can actually move into the workforce and stay in the workforce and make an actual living wage.
One of the other things I think a lot about as well is how to make home care, how to make domestic work, how to make child care, how to make it a voting issue for people, how to make it a central piece of any message in a campaign cycle, right? We talk so much about health care. We went through how many debates in 16 in the Democratic primary, where they were talking about the ins and outs of Medicare for all, and I'm for this, and I'm for that. And, you know, I think that it would be great if we could sort of take the idea of healthcare and maybe even broaden it out further and just talk about care, how everybody deserves care, whether it be childcare, whether it be home care, whether it be healthcare, right? As a person, you are deserving of a baseline of human dignity from the moment you are born and you're here to the moment that you perish and you pass away. And I don't know what happens after that. Maybe you come back. I don't know. There's aliens. There's a lot of things going on. You know what I mean? But it's a baseline of human dignity. And I feel like that needs to be a part of a campaign message. That needs to be a central voting issue for people. How can we make that so?
Well, in addition to my role as ED at the National Domestic Workers Alliance, I serve as an advisor to our sister organization, Care in Action. Care in Action is the political home for domestic workers. It's the political home for women of color who care for folks in this country. And we have joined several organizations and labor unions. So AFL-CIO, SEIU, Moms Rising, and more. We're really gonna work in coalition together. We have announced Care Can't Wait Action, and it is a $50 million electoral campaign. We want to mobilize the millions of voters who care about care in this country. We know that they're out there, and we know that they know that structurally we need to actually fix what's broken in this country. In 2024, you know, and beyond, we need to center care as a central issue. So we will be working in coalition to organize with people who want their loved ones to receive good care, who can't afford childcare. We're organizing with childcare workers, home care workers as well. We're gonna make sure that care is in the air, as we like to say, and that it's centered in this election cycle and beyond as well.
It is a central issue. It's like, this is one of those things that, like, when we talk about tax policy or you know, other issues during during a campaign cycle, I'm like, why are we talking about this? This is a thing that impacts everyone. Right. One of the other things that happened in this administration is that many of these policies, paid family leave, obviously child care, universal child care, investments into child care and home care, were in Build Back Better.
Yes.
But we didn't get that. How do we put that back on the table, John? How do we get this back, you know, in the air, as you just said?
You know what, Zerlina, we fell one senator short of, you know, those investments becoming law. And so I would just say that we've supercharged our fight. We, you know, like, we are women, we're women of color. We know that this issue spans across gender. It spans across generation. It's multi-generational. And so we're really going to crank up the public pressure. I like to say we're going to be beloved and feared, you know. We want to make sure that we get people to the polls, and we want to put care front and center. We know that it's a central issue. It's a unifying issue, like you said, Zerlina. It's a kitchen table issue. It affects our economy, and it's an emotional issue. It affects people's lives. And so we are really going to be fighting and organizing everyone, our neighbors, our friends, to make sure that we don't make that BBB fight be a fight that was in vain.
I think about all the people listening who maybe they've found themselves sort of surrounded by bills, or maybe they're themselves a care worker, not able to make ends meet, but also the people who need care to help, you know, facilitate their ability to do their jobs and take care of their families. And just, I think of the person who's just surrounded by bills without the support that they need. And I want everybody listening to know that this is actually the issue that you should just put on your list of things to advocate for. So we here on Progress, we're very engaged. Everybody's engaged and fighting to protect democracy, to push forward for civil rights, human rights, reproductive rights. We're going to be talking about that in the next segment. But I think care work also, and I'm very passionate about this. I will say this until I'm blue in the face. I can't really get blue, but you know what I'm saying.
We're so happy to have you in the fight.
Care work is on the list for me. Care work is on the list.
Great.
It is the thing that is central. It's a central component to all the other things.
It really is. We know that, like, we have to build a future where everyone thrives, and we need good care work and care systems to do that.
So how can our listeners help? How can they get involved in the action that is taking place and all of the engagement on the ground, grassroots, leading into the upcoming elections in 2024, but also to push for the specific federal domestic worker Bill of Rights, which has been reintroduced in both the House and the Senate?
We want everyone listening to join us. So you can go to our website, domesticworkers.org, domesticworkers.org. You'll see right on the homepage that you can click and write a letter to your congressperson to really support the bill. You can also get text alerts, emails, but just join this fight. It's going to take all of us.
Jen Stowe, Executive Director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, thank you so much for being here. This is a conversation I want to have every day of the week, so I appreciate you for being here this morning and having this conversation with me.
Thank you, Zerlina.
Please stay safe. We're going to take a very quick break, and then thank you. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to switch gears and talk about reproductive rights, which is a connected issue, and we're going to draw that line connecting those issues right after this break.